A squeaker. The Tampa Bay Lightning victorious last night against the New York Islanders in dramatic fashion. Late in the third, Nikita Kucherov, the hero. They now take a 2-0 series lead. Alex Killorn with a hearing today with the Department of NHL Player Safety. Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. Gentlemen, good afternoon. We're going to be joined by Louis DeBrusk here in a couple of moments from the NHL on Sportsnet. Also, Mark Recchi will stop by, bottom of the hour, New Jersey Devils, newly minted assistant coach. In the meantime, we'll focus on last night before we turn our attention to our guests and a preview of this evening. 2-1 is the final score, so not the blowout that we saw in Game 1. Berkey, we'll start with you. Is this was the game last night a little closer to what you thought this series would look like?
Yeah, it was. And I think Stewie's pregame comment last night was the right one, that teams that rely on structure and systems can get back in sync a lot quicker than teams that freelance. Because you've got that baseline, that chassis that you can just get everyone's there. Look at the film. We're not doing this right. It's simple. It's routine to get back to. And Stewie pointed that out, and I think it's a good point. I just don't know where you go from here, where you can't score on a five-minute penalty, major penalty, an extended 5-on-3, and then give up two great uncovered scoring chances to their two best forwards in the last minute of play. I don't know how you rebound from that.
Stewie, thoughts?
Well, we're on radio now, so we can stop pretending, Berkey. Berkey actually gave me that tip and told me to actually say that. So it was a good point. So all credit's due to Berkey. But, yeah, Islanders played a perfect game except for, 59 minutes and 52 seconds, whatever that math may be. They played it to a T, but they had a breakdown at the worst possible time. And I've been there as a player where – sometimes there's a delayed penalty or sometimes, it's the end of the period, you let your guard down. But that Tampa Bay Lightning team, if you let your guard down for even a shift, they have too much talent where they got guys that can kill you at any given moment of the game. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Islanders can recover from this, because a 2-0 hole against one of the best teams in the National Hockey League, I think it might be the bus may be permanently parked here.
This metaphor continues all throughout the playoffs. Who was the best player on the ice last night, Berkey? Nikita Kucherov turned into the hero. Was he the best player on the ice, or did you identify
Hedman.
Someone else? Yeah.
Hedman. I mean, I think if you were an alien and you dropped on to Edmonton and went in the rink and had never seen a hockey game before, I think you would have been startled by how good one player was, and that's Victor Hedman. I thought he was sensational last night.
He's probably the best defenseman in the NHL. Now, he's not going to win the award this year. That's going to be Yossi or Carlson. But you look consistently for how many seasons now. Smart, heads-up player. In Game 1, that tip-in goal by Braden Point is just... I mean, a lot of it is a smart, heads-up play by Victor Hedman, not to have the big booming shot, but wait, pause, change the angle, 18 inches above the ice, right to a point where he can deflect it. I mean, that's just part of his bag of tricks. I mean, Stewie, you've talked about Hedman before. If you're looking, we always used to say Nick Lidstrom was the perfect defenseman, right? Like, this guy is the perfect player. We haven't seen anyone like this in the NHL before. Is he as close, and they're different kinds of players, but is he as close to a perfect defenseman as you'll find in the game right now?
Yeah, and where I notice it is when, he may get caught in the blue line, and he just recovers. He's so big, he's so long, where you almost have to make that perfect play to beat him. But I think he's got more offensively, and I think, in the next couple of years, you're really going to see him now put up some major, major points. And for me, I think he's far and beyond the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. But I want to mention, I think one of the best players is Matthew Barzal, because I'm advocating for all the money for him next year. But just seeing him skate through traffic, not panicking when guys are on him, making plays at the blue line with 2-3 guys on him, that's amazing seeing in today's National Hockey League.
Pick up that conversation and the Hedman conversation with our first guest of the program. He is Louis DeBrusk from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Louis, we were just talking about Victor Hedman a couple of seconds ago. And listen, one of the things that he's probably most known for, tape-to-tape long bomb passes, which, first of all, are hard to do at the NHL level and even harder to do as efficiently and as effectively as Victor Hedman does on a consistent basis. But when I say the name Victor Hedman to Louis DeBrusque, what part of his game jumps out at you?
Oh, that's a good question because there's so many things that he does well. But I, for me, honestly, when you say Victor Hedman, I just look at I once said on an early broadcast, one of the first few times that I got to do Victor Hedman live, I said going around Victor Hedman is like trying to pass a snowplow on a single lane. Like, he is incredible at just riding people off in the play, and he makes it look so effortless. He, for a big, big guy, he's an extremely good skater, one of the best skaters in the league. And the thing is, he's physical. Don't get me wrong. I've seen him throw people around in fights. I've seen him push, hit people through the boards. But most of the time, he doesn't use that ultra physicality to finish you off. He just rides you into the boards, takes the puck off you, forces you to make a play. He always seems to be in the right position. And I kind of heard a little bit of what Anthony was saying there too. The impressive thing for me also now is, and I agree with him in that department, he's starting to put up points. He's really starting to find that he's always been confident, but now it's almost like he's taken another step where he's like, listen, I can do all of that stuff defensively, but now I can really be more of a force offensively. And listen, he is one of the best, if not the best defense in the league. I think if you give every team in the National Hockey League the pick of the litter amongst defensemen, say, who would you like on your team? Victor Hedman's going to be on most of those teams, I think, because he's that good of a player.
Berkey?
Hey, Louis, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, how you doing, Berkey?
I'm doing well, thanks. So building on that, I think part of it is the job that Julian Brisebois has done surrounding Hedman. He's got a partner, no matter who he goes out with. He's got a guy who will stay home and let him do all that stuff. He's done a great job putting the roster together.
He has, you know, and I think that's the biggest adjustment this year when you look at the changes the Tampa Bay Lightning have made. Barclay Goodrow is one guy. He's just a versatile guy up and down your lineup. Maroon, he has some grit. In the back end, though, you look at it, and they've developed some great players, too, and they're big. And, you know, this Cernak kid, for me, was a guy that jumped off the page for me when I first saw him play. I'm like, who is this guy? He looks like Ivan Drago out there, and he runs around, and he's really physical, but he just has, you know, he's the type of guy that knows exactly what he needs to do as far as what he, where he needs to be on the ice, the physicality that he needs to bring. Zach Bogosian's another guy, too, that I think maybe is underrated in the sense that he's an ultra-competitive guy. I mean, I liked him when he came into the league. Maybe he had some bumps along the road, and maybe there were higher expectations for him. Being in the Doughty draft, I think that maybe played a part in it as well. But to be honest with you, for a big, solid guy, he plays a mean game. He's got a heavy stick. I agree with you, Berkey. I think that the adjustments and changes they've made to the organization this year have built them to have a longer run in the playoffs. But not only that, has allowed them to weather some storms. And that's probably why John Cooper's dressed in 7Ds. You know, he's dressed in 7 defensemen there because he wants to spread out that workload. He wants to make sure the guys aren't being overtaxed. Hedman, I mean, plays 26 minutes in his sleep. That's not a big deal for him. But I do. I think they're a much harder team to play against.
Can I add one more thing here? I'm just going to jump in real quick. One more thing about Hedman that Rick Bonus told me and Friedman. We interviewed him for the 31 Thoughts podcast. And Bonus, when he was with Tampa, you know, did a remarkable job with Victor Hedman. And Louis, he said, you know, one of the first things I needed to get through to Hedman was trust. He said he had a natural predisposition not to trust coaches. And he said, you know, I spent so much time just talking to him, but none of it about hockey. You know, go for a walk, you know, go out somewhere and just talk about life and other things, but keep hockey very much at a distance. And it wasn't until, you know, Bonus told us, it wasn't until I got that trust away from hockey that he gave me the trust with hockey. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, you know what? It really does resonate for me because I had Rick Bonus as a coach in Phoenix, and also when I first started doing my broadcasting down there in Phoenix, he was the assistant coach with Gretz as well. So I've gotten to spend some time with him. We lived about 4 houses down in Peoria where I second lived in Phoenix, but that explains why Rick Bonus is so heavily regarded as a coach. And I think why so many players have stepped up now and said, listen, he's helped me a lot. And it's because of that personal touch that he brings to the table. He looks at a player, and I think every single player is different. And I think that's what Rick understands the most, is that you know, you can't treat everybody the same. So you have to come into the equation and kind of look and figure out exactly what's going to make that person tick. And most importantly, and you hit the nail right in the head, and obviously Victor Hedman said it, was trust. All players really want to do is trust that their coach has their best interest at their heart. They want to make you better so that your team can be better, so your organization can be better. If you feel that from your coach, you'll go through a wall for them. You know, that's just the way it is. I'm sorry. That's just, you know, as a player, listen, you're getting criticized. You're getting critiqued every single day. You're under a microscope. You get paid well to do what you do, but sometimes you can get old. And that trust can really be lost quickly from players. One skill for Rick Bowness, and obviously why you're seeing the Stars having some success this year, and I think really buying in, and he's not afraid to make decisions that are tough decisions, is that he's doing it for the betterment of each player individually and for the team. He wants to win. And, you know, Victor Hedman, I mean, that's amazing that he could turn that around. And because you look at him now and you don't see really any weaknesses, but you don't know what goes on behind closed doors and what it takes to get there. And every player has to make adjustments when they get to the National Hockey League. Every player has to make adjustments to get to the peak performance that we see now on a nightly basis from the best players in the game. And that's just a great example of a young defenseman that came in and at the same time had to adjust some things himself to be one, if not the best defenseman in the league.
Stewie.
What were your thoughts on the Alex Killorn hit on Brock Nelson there? I thought it was an unnecessary hit because you can still get credited with the hit and not have to explode him up against the glass. I wanted to get your take on that.
You know, Anthony, I think we've broken this down. I know we've talked about a couple other hits throughout the playoffs, and you know, I've heard the panel breaking it down too, and I think we're all on the same page that the hits from behind just have to be taken out of the game. You know, I've been vocal about this before. I really don't like them. And I, as a player, and Anthony, you, all of us will know this. I would rather be slashed anywhere in my body pretty much than have someone take a run at me and hit me in the numbers. Honestly, I really would. I'd rather have someone try and take my head off. I'd rather have someone try and clip me with a headshot similar to Ryan Reeves' hit than hit me right in the numbers. Honest to God, that's just my personality. I'm like, that is the most defenseless position you can be in on the ice. It's one of the most dangerous positions you can be in the ice. Now, I'm not going to say that Alex Killorn's hit was, you know, it was. You see this almost nightly 10 times in a game where somebody finishes a check, they don't hit them as hard, they don't hit their head in the boards, and they don't leave the ice like Brock Nelson, okay? But for me, if you start there and you start to really punish even the follow-through hits that are in the numbers, I understand that every coach is preaching hit, hit, hit. And when I played, it was the same thing. If I didn't hit, I wouldn't play. So if I didn't go in there and finish my check and a guy turned and I didn't finish my check, they'd be like, why didn't you finish your check? I'd be like, well, you know, listen, he was kind of in a bad spot. Nope, finish your check. And that was just the mentality. And our mentality was to take head. If you're going to hit someone, take their head off. That's how we used to speak on the bench. Times have changed. They've done an excellent job for the most part of taking hits to the head out of the game. And I think the players understand that. Even Ryan Reeves, who's a tremendous hitter and a guy that doesn't take penalties, he doesn't take bad penalties, I think once looking at that video goes, okay, listen, I understand. I clipped head. I took a one-game suspension. I served my suspension. He went back out in game number three and was running around like he normally does and finished some great hits and was a big factor in the game. Now it's time for the Department of Player Safety to look at hits from behind and seriously buckle down. Get it out of the game. That you don't even have to finish that hit. I agree with you, Anthony. That's an unnecessary hit. I understand you want to make an impact in the game, but if a guy has his back to you, just skate by. And if they say they couldn't change their mind, trust me, as a physical guy, I promise you he didn't have to hit him. You can alter your course at the last second. You can.
I want to get your thoughts on
Jeff,
that
can
win
I jump
last
in?
Night.
Can I jump in, Jeff?
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Louie, and sorry, Stewie. I disagree a little bit with you. I don't think it was a hit from behind. I think it started off as a side-to-side hit as he tried to pass him on the inside and then finish. I didn't like the finish. I'm with Louie on everything. He finished him high and hard. And we used to say the same thing on the bench, Louie. High finish on everything. High finish on everything.
Yeah.
And we actually used to grade players that didn't hard finish. They would lose points on the scouting form. So you'd say this guy's a, like Victor Hedman, his draft year. Someone said no hard finish. No hard finish. So he lost points for that. So I didn't like the finish here. I don't think it was a hit for mine. I don't think it's a suspension. I think the five in game was enough for me, and I'm hoping he doesn't get more.
Well, you know what? Okay, so I understand what you're saying. It's because he kind of hit him in the back of the shoulder. But if you look at the hit again, I'm going to still call it a little bit of a hit from behind because the guy didn't see him coming. And he finished it. And I don't think it was that late, to be honest with you. I know that – and what was the hit? I'm just trying to remember the hit where it was a late finish, and I was like, I don't know, but it was Richie on Gord. And, I mean, I'm looking at that, and, again, it was another guy that was kind of in a sidewards, a little bit of a shoulder-in position. It's a vulnerable position. So if you don't want to say hits from behind, we can say vulnerable, but he certainly hit him in the back of the shoulder. And it's just unnecessary. And especially, this is the thing, if that happens in the middle of the ice, nobody cares because he just kind of he hits him, he spins, he falls down. But along the boards, especially when there's nowhere else for people to go, I think that's where they have to really look at. I agree with you. It wasn't a textbook hit into the numbers, shoulder into the middle of the crest in the back. But it certainly was an unsuspecting player that didn't see him coming, and he popped him, and he went headfirst into the boards because there was nowhere else for him to go.
Yeah. As we did mention off the top, Alex Killorn does have a meeting with the NHL, Department of Player Safety, later today. I look at that win last night, Louis, by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and if I'm any other team in the NHL, certainly the Islanders, you know, both Vegas and Dallas having a look at this one, that win last night scares me more about Tampa than them blowing out the Islanders 8-2. Like, we all know what they can do and dance and light it up and all that. The fact that Tampa can win that game now, Louis, if I'm the rest of the league, that game scares me.
I couldn't agree more. I was thinking the exact same thing. When Kucherov pulled that out, I was like, wow, these guys are finding ways to win games now where they most likely wouldn't have won those games over the course of the last few years. Listen, this is a team that's been building for a while. They've gone to the Stanley Cup final. This is a team that we expected to be, you know, a winner in the last few years or at least compete for. They got bounced in the first round last year in a series that, I mean, I don't think anybody, I certainly didn't see that coming. And you know what? I think it's hardened them. I really do. I think that adversity they faced last year has carried over into this year. Listen, a big loss, though. I mean, Brayden Point for me being out, obviously Killorn being out, they were down to 9 forwards because they dressed 7D. So, I mean, that's, but they still found a way. And I agree with you. That's what really, really good teams do. They can weather storms. They can make up for losses. And they just continue to play the way they play. And that's what makes great teams great, is that they can adjust to all of that. It's the next person in. And you know what? They're going to have some difficulty here. I agree with you too, Berkey, going back to what you said. I don't know if there should be a suspension on this, personally. I look at that and I'm like, okay, you know what? They called it a 5. Perfect. I don't know that he needs to be suspended more. I agree with you in that regard. But they're going to be shorthanded a little bit here with Brayden Point potentially being out. But I agree with you, Jeff. That was a win that the Islanders looked at. They did a lot of things right. They had opportunities on the power play. They couldn't finish off there. That's one of those ones where you're like, geez, did we ever let that go away? And I think Barry Trotz in his comments, you could tell he understands. He's been around the game for a long time, won a Stanley Cup, obviously, in 18. He's like, that one stung even more. I can't remember the exact quote that he used, but he said that one was like a, you know, it hurt.
Berkey.
Yeah, moving back out, it did hurt. Moving back out west, why is Dallas having so much trouble with their discipline? They seem to get it in check, and then they just can't resist. Radulov can't help himself. Perry can't help himself. Why is that a problem? You're in the third round of the playoffs, for Pete's sake.
You know, and that's the one thing, you know, the Radulov penalty in the last game, I probably didn't go at him hard enough, and I was looking at him, and I'm thinking, you know what? Like, that's not a great penalty to take at that time. And I think it's just, it's a really good question, Brian, because I don't know. I look at it and I see these are veteran players that have been around, especially Corey Perry. This is his fifth conference final. I mean, that guy has been around. He has been in the trenches. He's been in the battles. He went to 4 with Anaheim, won a cup in 07. This is his fifth conference final. I think, you know, a lot of times with Corey Perry, and I'm just going to speak to him because I know that for him it's the passion and just trying to be in the mix and trying to grind out, pull people into the fight with him, and maybe – on the flip side, we've seen him draw penalties doing that. I think he's honestly doing it from the right perspective. Speed, though. I think speed for Perry is the one thing that pops into my mind, and also for Radulov. The Vegas Golden Knights play a really fast game. They frustrate you. They take pucks. They steal pucks. They blow by you. They hit you. They forecheck. Everywhere you are on the ice, it's pressure, pressure, pressure. It's incredible to watch them play. It really is. And I've always felt that's the way the game should be played. I love the way they play because it's high impact. It's quick feet. It's support. And it's very, very difficult to navigate through. The Dallas Stars did a tremendous job in Game 1. They did the exact same thing back to Vegas that Vegas did to them in Game 2. But in Game 2, they were really frustrated, and I think that got the better of them. And especially Radulov, you know, I didn't think it was that big of a hit that he took, and he just turned around and took a swing at Stone, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that's not even – if you can't take a hit like that in the playoffs, you're in trouble because you're going to get hit every shift you're on the ice. So, yeah, I think they definitely need to buckle that down. Rick Bowness, I'm sure, will have conversations with all of them because he's talked about it in the past as well. We cannot allow this team to get momentum through power plays. Even if they're not scoring, they're going to eventually score, which they do, and you're going to pay the price because they're going to get all the momentum, and it's very hard to rip it out of their hands once they have it. So I expect a much more disciplined team in Game 3 tonight.
Stewie.
I'm very guilty of checking my Twitter mentions, and everyone gives me flack when I talk about, you know, Ryan Reeves and what he brings to this roster. But what do you notice, his impact, that has nothing to do with stats or Corsi? I'm talking eye test.
Don't worry, Anthony. We've gotten ripped for it, too. You know, CC and I have talked about, you know, we're maybe talking about Ryan Reeves too much, and I'm saying, how can we not talk about the guy? I mean, the guy is in every highlight. What do you want us to do? Sorry, Tampa's going to make an appearance here in the call again, which he does every call. You know what, for Ryan Reeves, for me, and I'm just going to, sorry, I got to let him out or else he'll keep barking. My bad, guys. So I love the way he plays. You know what, I was a tough guy, and so I have a fondness for, as Berkey does, obviously, as you do, Anthony, as well. You're a big physical guy. The truculence in the game. I mean, I love that word, and I swear I really do. And I like hard workers. I like guys that know what their job is. Ryan Reeves knows exactly what he needs to do in the game. And you know what? He refuses not to allow himself to be involved in the game in some capacity. So very similar to a guy we were just talking about in Corey Perry, who's in the fabric of the game. He's always in the mix. He's always making sure something's going on. Ryan Reeves does it a different way. He obviously doesn't have the offensive skills that Corey Perry had throughout his career and puts up the numbers, but he finds a way for us to talk about him every single game. And that is really important. If you're going to be that guy in today's day and age where, listen, guys like me are dinosaurs, then I'll tell you what, you're going to have to find a way to mesh yourself into the fabric of that game each and every night. And I remember a guy, you know, it's funny, Jeff Brubaker, I had him down in the minors. Oh. He was one of my favorite coaches. Oh, my God, this guy was a beauty, guys. We could go a whole segment talking about stuff that Brew did. But he was incredible for me, and I mean incredible for me, because he put me in a position to succeed. But one of the things that he said to me that really stuck with me was, he said, listen, he goes, when you go back up to Tampa Bay, because I was with the Lightning at that time, he says, when you go back up to Tampa Bay, he goes, when I'm reading the paper, I want to see your name in the paper every single game. I don't care if it's a penalty. I don't care if it's just something. I just want you to be on that score sheet in some way, shape, or form. That should be your goal every single game. Well, listen, when you have 8 to 10 hits a night, you're going to be noticed. And listen, him and Will Carrier on that fourth line are wrecking balls. They are a nightmare. And if you want to know how important they are, Anthony, I'll tell you this. It doesn't matter who the opposition puts out there. That is who Peter DeBoer puts on the ice to start in the game. If it's their shift, he doesn't rip them off the ice if there's a change that he doesn't like. He leaves them on the ice. You go back to what we were talking about earlier with Jeff, you and I, about trust amongst players. Sure. They trust that their coach has their back. He trusts them, and it puts everybody in line on that team. You know how it is. You go out for practice, and we're like so superstitious and routine. It's every drill is the same. The same two guys go at the same time in the morning skate. The same two guys go up the ice first for warm-up, first for game, different taps. He starts that line every single game, and you know what? It allows everybody else to settle in and know exactly where they're supposed to be in that lineup, and it's working. I wouldn't change a thing.
Louis, I want to ask you about one other element of Ryan Reeves, and I'm always curious because you were, I mean, geez, I never saw you handled in junior. You're one of the guys that, to me, ran the table when you played with London. I want to ask you about his fighting, Ryan Reeves' fighting technique. Like, everyone sort of does it a little different. George Laroc, you know, grab you. And I remember when George would grab you, he'd shake you and get you off balance. Like, that was part of his technique. You know, Bob Probert would, you know, let you tire yourself out and then come on in the second half of the fight. We've seen guys that are, you know, volume punchers and just drag you into deep water and don't let you catch a breath right from the hop. What do you make of Ryan Reeves? Like, is there anything you're able to discern from how he's... Maybe I should ask Anthony this, too. Anything discernible that you look at and you say, man, this is the one thing that Ryan Reeves does when he fights that nobody else does?
Well, you know, the thing for me is, and I've talked to him about this, because I kind of admire the way he fights. And, when I was playing, and especially video, I used to break down a lot of video. I used to watch a lot of fights.
Yeah.
And I still do. I love watching fights. I'm not going to lie to you. I call it barbaric, but I still love watching a great tilt. And I love seeing two guys go at it, pat each other afterwards. Ryan Reeves, for me, though, is really calm. And that's really important in his fighting style. You know, I've talked to him about that. He had to kind of train himself how to fight, because it wasn't in his nature to do that when he first got into the game. He's a big physical guy, obviously. He was a great hitter. He'd run around. He'd smash people. But then, obviously, being a big guy, he understood he was going to have to answer the bell. So he started working with a boxer. And, you know, he started training. And, you know what? For him, I just think he has really good hands. I really do. I think he has really good hands. He has a great grip. And one of the things that he told me that he does that I found fascinating, we talked about in after hours a little bit, was he tries to make the opponent comfortable. So the thing that I appreciate about that is I was a cerebral fighter. I know people think, you held on too much. You did this. You tied up. I was smart, though. I was kind of like MMA. I love grappling because I like the chess match that it becomes on how you can exploit and how you can finish somebody. And that, to me, is really appealing. I love a slug-out fight, too. Don't get me wrong. I love cowboys. That just wasn't in my mentality to do that. And Ryan Reeves is similar that way, and he'll try and make his opponent a little bit uncomfortable. So, for instance, if a guy likes to grab him in the middle of his jersey, he'll grab that hold hand and he'll move it. He told me he'll literally rip it off his jersey, and he'll force him to grab somewhere that he doesn't like to grab. So what that tells me is that he's thinking throughout the fight. You know, he's constantly trying to think and adjust, which makes him very dangerous. You know, those, to me, were the hardest guys to fight. Guys that grabbed on him were one-dimensional. If I could get a hold of that arm and I had the strength to tie them up, which I did in junior, you're talking about, I was stronger than everybody. So I could grab on the guys, and I could twist them. I could put them into a position that I needed them to be in, and I could handle them. I might not beat them up, but I'm going to handle them. I'm not going to get hurt in the fight at all. And I'm going to, you know, I can be able to pick them apart if I can get my arm loose. Whereas Ryan, he's adjusting on the fly. And that makes him doubly dangerous. And listen, he's a pretty lean 225. I mean, you see him, you don't look at him as a giant guy, but there's not a whole lot of extra on Ryan Reeves. I'll tell you what, he's in really good shape. And he knows it. And you know what? He can go explosive out of the gates, or he can go for the long haul in a fight. It doesn't matter to him, but good on him. You know what? He's carving out a niche in a game right now where that's a really difficult niche to have in the NHL, because they've tried for a long time to get that out of the game. And it's going to be up to players like Ryan around the league to keep it going by making sure that it's necessary.
One quick final story. We got about 30 seconds for this one. True or false, when you were playing junior, Brad May once came to you and gave you a note in the penalty box that you two guys were going to fight when you came out?
He did. Yeah, Mayday and I, we were pretty close to weight back in junior. So just think of that. Like, Brad May could fight anybody, and he'd step up way out of his weight class all the time, which we saw in the NHL, you know, fighting, you name it, Derek Boogaards and whoever. Everybody. He would fight everybody. But when we were in junior, that guy was a handful, and I mean a mega handful. And we had some great tilts. I only ever beat him once, I think, to be honest with you. And that was the night. I beat him pretty good in Niagara Falls. And I think it was Mark LaForge. Mark. I played with Mark in Edmonton. Bill LaForge, you had a coach. He threw this note over the boards, and somebody pointed to it, and I picked it up and read it. And it said, "Every time you're on the ice, be ready, number 10. That was Mayday's number in Niagara Falls. And I look over at Mayday, I look over in the box, and it had the perfect effect on me, because I started getting mad. I started getting enraged, going, "Are you serious? Like, okay, we're going again. You better be ready." And he's looking at me going, "What are you talking about?" But that was Bill LaForge, right? They had Denny Viel. They had Brad May, Paul Laus. I mean, they had some grit and sandpaper on that team. You know what it got me drafted, though, honest to God? I have to thank Bill LaForge, who's no longer with us. But you know what? Because of the guys that he sent out after me my first year in junior, it's the reason I got drafted. Honest to God, the guys that I had to fight that first year in junior, there a lot of those guys went on to play in the National Hockey League. So I have to tip my hat to him. He was crazy at times, I think, but he was always trying to, you know, give his team the edge. And I think that's important for a coach.
Such great stories. Louis, this has been a delight as always. Thanks so much. We'll check back regular. Thanks, pal.
Okay, guys. Take care. You guys are doing a great job, by the way.
Pete's working. There he is, Louis DeBrusque from Hockey Net in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. Some great, great stories there. We'll hit pause. We'll come back. Other side, Mark Recchi, assistant coach of the New Jersey Devils. Hockey Central carries on. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, welcome back to the program. I want to thank Louis DeBrusque for stopping by alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. This is Jeff Merrick saying... Our next guest is no stranger to hockey circles, going all the way back to his starring role in the Western Hockey League. He is Mark Recchi. He is now the assistant coach of the New Jersey Devils, and he joins us now. Mark, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
We're doing well. I want to get your thoughts. I mean, you come into New Jersey now, assistant coach, new team. And the one thing, I think a couple of us, I mean, Justin Bourne would talk about this all the time, about the New Jersey Devils is, even though they, you know, didn't have the success that they wanted to this year, every time you watched New Jersey, there was something happening, something developing, something different, something you could hang on to, something that made you go, oh, wow, this is going to be good somewhere down the road. As you coached against New Jersey, what did you think of the Devils, Mark?
Well, that's exactly it. We thought they were a young team that has a lot of potential, and obviously they've had some pretty high picks, and those picks, you know, they need some time to develop in this league, and you know, they've got some great young prospects, and it's just really exciting to you know, to be able to just maybe go have an impact on those young guys and see what I can do with them.
Berkey.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Mark. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to talk to you. It's great.
So your notion on the playoffs, I want to talk about New Jersey in a minute, but what have you seen? What's interested you in the Eastern Conference Finals so far?
Well, last night was the game that I really expected to see, obviously in game one, and you know, that was a physical, hard, tough game last night. They've already got some hate in each other, and that was a heck of a game last night, and that's the game I knew the Islanders would play. And travel schedule and everything, I think it hurt them a little bit their first game, but this is going to be a heck of a series. I don't think they're going to go down without a fight. And Tampa to me has learned how to play in the playoffs. I think they've had some tough goals the last few years, and I think they've learned from them. And you know, they're just a different team. They're playing great hockey right now as well.
Stewie.
Mark, I had Jacques Martin as a head coach in Florida. How was it, you know, standing next to him and learning from him, a guy that's one of the most prepared coaches in the National Hockey League?
Jacques was awesome. He's a great guy. You know, we became great friends. I learned a lot from him. You know, you're right. He's prepared. He's organized. And you know, he's very, you know, he thinks about things. He's very... he thinks it out and very well thought, and it's just, he was a great, great person to be around. And same with Mike Sullivan. They, you know, I learned a lot from those two. It was tremendous being around them for 3 years, and then before that, obviously, as well, in player development, I was still around quite a bit.
With Mark Recchi, assistant coach of the New Jersey Devils, former Stanley Cup winner, member of the Hockey Hall of Fame, and you know, you played a real cool brand of hockey. I mean, and many would describe it as an old school brand of hockey. I can recall numerous times, you know, watching you go into the corner with a younger player, and out of nowhere, boom, comes that, you know, that bump back, the cold shoulder, the Peter Forsberg reverse it, whatever you want to call it, and you say to yourself, yeah, that's that old school, you know, that's an old school move by Mark Recchi. You know, now you're handling New Jersey Devils players starting next season as an assistant coach, and as you mentioned, this is a really young team. Like, what can Mark Recchi teach a lot of these younger players from your time in the NHL?
Well, You know what? I've talked to Lindy and Fitzy about this. The one thing that I find now is a lot of young guys don't have a game, like a second game that they can rely on. They're everything's so skill based right now, and if they're not on that night, I think the biggest thing is you have to find a way to be an impact in the game. And it can be a number of different ways. It could be physical. It could be just playing the right way, just making sure you're solid defensively, and having a plan B in a game that night. 82 games is a long season. You're not going to have it every night. So to me, helping them understand that, you know, you've got to find another way to be impactful every night, you know, because you're just not going to have it some nights. And I think that's a big part where I can teach them. I think, you know, Berkey and Stewie can, but they can understand what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. You know, back then, I think a lot of guys had that up, you know, they had that plan B. They knew how to play if they didn't have it that night. And I think it's very important. I think it's something I can teach them and communicate and work with them that way.
Berkey?
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about, Mark, because many nights I didn't have my A game. I recall when we were talking about you, and I'm on the selection committee at the Hockey Hall of Fame, and someone said, you know, because one of the things we look at is international. I'm not going to talk about your nomination. We're not allowed to do that. But
yeah.
One thing was noted was that you did not have an extensive international resume. And we're all like, that's because his teams are in the playoffs every year.
Yeah, I'd rather have that than more international play. But
yeah, but you did play obviously in the World Juniors and put up good numbers, and you did go to the World Championships once. What was that like for you?
Oh, that World Championship was fun. It was a great experience. You know, obviously when you win, it always makes it that much better. And you know, we had a great, you know, we came together as a team, and you know, you don't have that long to come together, and we did. We found a way, and it was a really great experience for me. I really enjoyed it.
Stewie?
New coaches, you know, sort of emulate styles of past coaches they had over the years as players. So is there a coaching style that you like to adapt from a former coach?
I had so many great coaches. You know, like I like to try and tend to be on the positive side. So, you know, like I had Roger Nielsen. I loved Roger Nielsen. Claude Julien has been awesome. You know, I had Ken Hitchcock, you know, who was completely different, who was more of a motivator, a little bit of a barker. And I just had great coaches along the way. And you know, you take a little bit of something from all of them and you learn from them. And you remember back and how they handled things or, you know, how they were. And you just kind of, you know, learn from that. And that's you know, when you have that many coaches as I did, you really can take a lot from it.
And you mentioned Roger Nielsen there a second ago, and as in people in this area, you know, up the street here in Peterborough, where he was a legendary coach, you know, everybody's got, you know, Roger Nielsen stories. You know, one of my favorite, and they had to change a rule about this, is, you know, on penalty shots, Roger would pull his goaltender out. I'm trying to think of who the defenseman was. I think it might have been Ron Stackhouse, who he'd put in net for penalty shots. And the player would grab the puck at center ice and Stackhouse would charge out, you know, intercept the puck around the blue line and the penalty shot was over. I think he went, you know, 7 for 7 one year with the Peterborough Petes on penalty shots. And so they changed the rule because of what Roger Nielsen used to do by pulling his netminder on penalty shots. Was there anything, Mark, that you noticed from Roger that you said, well, you know what, that really sort of changes the way that I look at this position or this situation? Or maybe, you know, did Roger change the way you looked at hockey at all?
You know, Roger was great. He was one of the first one that went to three forwards when we had the 4-on-4. Yep. He was probably one of the first guys that did that. And that made an impact on me, obviously. It was, you know, he entrusted, you know, I was one of the guys that he entrusted on being out there. And, you know, so you learn a little bit from that and understanding, and you try and get a little bit forward thinking, which he was. You know, he had old school in him, but he was very forward thinking. And, you know, he liked to have his tough teams, and that was, people didn't realize, but he always seemed to have a pretty tough team wherever he was as well.
Yep, that's the truth. Berkey?
Yeah, interestingly, I was looking at this last night. 97 World Championships. Travis Green and Dean Evason were both on that team. Both guys head coaching in the NHL now. Talk about them. Did you see them as guys that would make good coaches?
I did. I knew Dean Evason before I knew Travis, and he was a Kamloops junior Oiler back in the day, and I watched him and got to be friends with him. And yes, I definitely saw Dean Evason as somebody that was going to have an impact in coaching and working with players. And then getting to know Greeny over the years, definitely. I mean, they've both done a terrific job wherever they've been and have a lot of success. And so I definitely did see that with those guys for sure.
Stewie.
So I know you just got the assistant coaching gig, but do you have head coaching aspirations down the line?
Yeah, I definitely do now. I got a feel for it now, and I, like I said, I had a couple great years with these, you know, Sully and the Penguins and Jacques, and you know, I think I'm still learning, and I'm going to be under another great guy in Jacques Martin Lindy Ruff, and I'm really looking forward to that and seeing if I can keep growing as a coach, and I definitely like that opportunity at one point here for sure.
You know, I want to ask you about one player specifically as we thank you for your time and we'll let you get on with your day after talking to us about how you feel about a player like Nico Hischier. Like, we're seeing a change in the game right now. Once again, these changes happen quickly now, and there's this new generation of player, and a lot of the trophies are going to start to be won by players with a lot of different names, and Nico Hischier is probably someone, you know, that's going to be in that Selke trophy conversation somewhere down the road, probably sooner than later. What do you make of Nico Hischier?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, I look at him like a Patrice Bergeron, a Couturier, these type of guys. That's the type of player I look at him as. He's young, and he's got a great 200-foot game already, very responsible. He plays the right way. He plays hard. He's hard on pucks. And I'm really excited to get the opportunity to work with him and the other young guys they have. But he's going to be a terrific player. And I would put him in those, you know, as long as he keeps improving, which I hear he's a great young man. And I look forward to seeing him keep getting better.
Yeah, he's a wonderful athlete. Listen, this is it's been a lot of fun. Mark, thanks so much for stopping by. Best of luck with the New Jersey Devils.
Great. Thanks very much for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
There is Mark Recchi, former NHLer, Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup winner, et cetera, et cetera. The accolades are long when it comes to Mark Recchi, going all the way back to when he played with New West and then Kamloops in the Western Hockey League. I really loved watching that guy play hockey, Berkey and Stewie. Mark Recchi was one of my favorite players. Old school guy, produced wherever he went, wasn't shy, great personality. I remember when, you know, he was, you know, brought in for various, you know, Stanley Cup runs from various teams. Just when I look at him, Berkey, I just look at him and say, like, just flat out, that's a really good hockey player right there.
Yeah, and what I liked about him when I watched him play was he never minded, like you said. He wasn't physical himself particularly, but he didn't mind games that got physical. I mean, in that area, he kind of had no choice. Yeah. But what I liked is he could play with anybody. Like, there are a lot of good hockey players that can't play with anyone unless they play with a certain center or on a certain line. Or he played on all different teams, all different styles of play. He was versatile that way, but he could play with anybody. And that's just a really rare thing.
Stewie, what do you think of Recchi as the player?
Yeah, he was obviously an amazing player, and I always have to look. Was he on the Legion of Doom? But he wasn't. But he's one of those guys where you think,
Crazy
you
know, Eights,
he put up...
Brent Fedek.
He put
Brent
up,
Fedek
yeah,
and Eric Lindros.
You're thinking, you know, he's a pretty good guy, you know, put up 75 points. But you look at his stats, he had a couple hundred-point season. He had a 50-goal season.
Yeah, man.
And he had like a... I don't know how you have a quiet 1,500-point career, but I don't think he really gets the respect he deserves as a player. He's one of the greats for sure.
The Hall of Fame new, right, Berkey? The Hall of Fame
yep.
new.
It took a while, though.
It took a while, but that happens.
That's, yep, yep.
That happens. Hall of Fame got it. We'll hit a break. We'll come back, talk a little about Vegas and Dallas in Game 3 later on tonight. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, back on the NHL page here in a sec. Well, Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Brian Burke. Burkey, what are we looking for tonight? It's Game 3, Dallas Stars and Vegas Golden Knights. A huge, you went out of your way to make this point. Huge win in Game 2 by Vegas. The second period just all over Dallas, and that was the difference. What do you look for tonight?
Well, to me, I'm trying to see which team shows up for Dallas. I felt Game 1... they were confident and skated well. We commented on the broadcast about how their D were activated all night, how they threw out some big hits. And in Game 2, to me, they lacked that confidence. Vegas targeted their defense and hit them hard, kept them from joining the rush. They really didn't generate any offense. So their first two games in the series against Colorado, they scored 10 goals. And now after two games, they've got one. So they've got to find some offense, and their power play sucks, frankly. They got to get that going. Mm-hmm.
You know, this has kind of been the story of the Dallas Stars pretty much all season long. Like, sometimes, we've talked about this plenty of times, fellas, sometimes they look like world beaters. It's the best team in the NHL. How do you defeat these guys? Other times, you watch the game and you say, we saw the nameplates and the numbers, but that didn't look like Tyler Seguin. That didn't look like Jamie Benn. That didn't look like John Klingberg, etc. Stewie, who are the real Dallas Stars?
Will they stand up? But I think for tonight we can look for, you know, Pete DeBoer announced that he doesn't know who the starter is, but I think you can look for Robin Leonard to start. I think that debate's over who the number one goaltender is. But for Dallas, they just got to stay out of the box. You know, even going back to last series, they were just running around, and, you know, we got Corey Perry's shoelace tackling guys for no reason. So just focus on playing hockey. I think the physicality tone has already been set. You're in the Western Conference Finals. Get down to playing hockey. So look for Ben to continue. I think Ben's going to break out soon. He's playing physically. Look for Tyler Seguin to hopefully get on the board. But right now, I think they got to find a way to solve Robin Leonard.
Robin Leonard is fascinating. We'll end on this one, Bricky. We'll get your thoughts on the goaltender. We talked the other day about the Conn Smythe Trophy, and we talked about Tampa, and we talked about Braden Point. Is his main rival for the Conn Smythe at this point Robin the shutout machine Leonard?
Yeah, and I think it is. But I think right now, if I had a vote, and I know it's early, I'd vote for Hedman.
He is dynamic. I mean, you can make a case for, listen, you can make the case for Kucherov as well. You can make a thinner case, but I think you can make some noise for Shea Theodore from the Vegas Golden Knights. There's no shortage of candidates so far. Anyway, enjoy it tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern, Game 3, the Stars and the Knights.